Hello, hello, hello.
Hey, Paul.
Howdy.
How are you?
Good, thanks. I'll put video on. Hang on. There we go. That's me.
Oh, hey. Appreciate it.
I'm using the wonders of mobile technology. You can see bushland behind me. So.
You look like you're not in the city.
No, I'm in the bush. It's actually Mount Karingai.
Bush, yes.
Yeah, anyway. Mate, good to talk to you.
Talk to you as well.
Yeah, it must be looking forward to coming down to Australia.
Oh yeah, I'm so stoked. Yeah, this is the last, you know, the week prior. There's all the different emotions and getting things ready and preparing and making sure things, you know, everything's in place, and then get on that plane and just relax and come down there and enjoy the opportunity.
Great. So how much equipment do you have to bring down these days? Because technology has obviously changed massively in a good way.
Well, I'm not bringing a lot of... They're providing the decks, and I'm bringing a little synthesizer and a sampler and my laptop. So it's not... it's sort of a... It's a DJ set, but it's like a hybrid DJ set because I trigger samples and I play some synthesizer over the top, and I have augmented versions of my tracks, and you know, I've got so I'm also, you know, multiple layering and just so there's a lot technical nonsense, but it's expensive to bring the live rig down there for sure. I mean it hasn't gotten any cheaper over the years. I think it's more expensive now than it is. So, but yeah, I'm really excited.
Okay,
really
so do you bring the Roland synth, you know, the old classic, out on the road, or you just don't do that?
No, the Jupiter six. No, I don't. He's off the road permanently. The Jupiter six is he's. We did tour with him in the past. No, I bring like this a boutique. It is a Roland, it's a tight little package of it's modeled after the Studio Electronics SE1. It's called the SE2. So it packs a lot of punch. It's loud and it's got some really great sounds, and so I enjoy bringing that one down.
Nice, excellent. So what sort of set list can we expect, or do you want to keep it a secret?
I've been I like to keep things a little spontaneous. I mean, I do have I currently have a bunch of tracks that I definitely want to, that are in the mix, there's a couple new things that I've been working on, some variations, some new mixes that haven't been heard before. I mean, it's 2 hours, so I mean, I'm touching on the entire catalog, and then adding some other tracks from different artists, just to things that I'm just really into that I think that work well within those 2 hours. So it's a fun time. I don't do the same set. I don't repeat the same set. I know a lot of people do. I don't have the brain for that.
That's not my. Yeah, I understand. Do you delve into live instrumentation at all, or do you just basically stick to drum programming?
You mean when I'm in the studio?
No, when you're playing live. I'm just wondering if there's any need to bring instrumentation with you.
I do just simply because I'd like to... I mean, I... Just like a... It's like a... You know, I get a sampler and I'm playing the things over the top and... But I mean, the way the setup with the decks and all that. I have a lot of layers and different things that I put over the top. So just out of just kind of this creating this set that is modular in the sense that it's never the same, it never repeats. It can be spontaneous. If somebody throws out, you know, a request, I can, you know, I can work that into the set. Instinctually just like, oh, we need to change the tempo here, we need to do something different, let's, you know, switch things out, you know. And so I currently have about 100 plus songs that I'm into, and I'll probably add another 20, and then when I get down there, you know, I'll kind of get that down to around 40, and then go from there. But I'm always like wanting to, you know, it's the magic of being in a room with a bunch of people, and that you kind of feel, you know, where things should go. It's one of the great things about being having not only a catalog that goes back 30 years, but also just a great joy of a love for music in general. So I mean, I'll drop Tool in there every once in a while. I'll do AC/DC. I'll do Black Sabbath. I've dropped a couple bootlegs of those that I put in my set. So it's about having a great arsenal of tracks to begin with, but then just being in the moment and feeling your way through the set.
Understood. There's a lot of rock bands that are generally using live tracks as well these days, and just in that light, I'm wondering if when you've got all this electronic equipment, if there's any, you know, potential nightmares, or you've just got a little backup laptop that you launch into.
Oh yeah, I mean, I know that that when bands are because again, there's so much stuff that goes on in the studio, it's sometimes really difficult to recreate that out. So yeah. I mean, I sometimes will have a deck fail or something will go wrong, and then it's I don't care. Two laptops. I do have some contingency plans if something, or I just get on the mic and I'll tell a story and then tell everything's boot back up.
Fair enough. Yeah, that's a good way of doing it. You've done a lot of production work, not just with Crystal Method, but in your own right and with other artists. It's a huge discography, but is there any particular artist you've worked with that stands out as the most inspiring, I suppose, musically?
Well, definitely always the name that pops in my head when this question is asked in one form or another is Tom Morello, because
yep.
Not only incredibly talented, but and you know, just inventive and creative and, you know, and genius as at what he does. But he's also super kind. He's always, you know, when we worked with him, he was in the moment. He, you know, no matter what's going on in his world, you know, when you get him in the studio for those X amount of hours, he's completely all in. So definitely one that was very inspiring. Discover's an artist that you're probably not familiar with down there, but his name is John Bryan, and he's very experimental. He's been basically on every, the first five Crystal Method albums in one form or another, but he's just a savant, just one of these guys that can pick up an instrument, any instrument, and figure it out within the next, you know, even if he's never touched it, which again, at this point, he's probably touched every instrument, so he knows, so it's so incredible to be around someone that has those abilities. Recently we did a remix for NoFX. This NoFX project it's called Melvinator, but getting some of those stems was a lot of fun. And there's another band called the Blue Stones out of Canada, so there's countless other names that are coming to my head right now, but I definitely feel that the one that's always has, I think, has made the most significant impact on our career and sort of set the bar is Tom Morello, for sure.
Oh, fair enough. Yeah, and I suppose there's no limit to creativity when you've got electronica involved, because you can just do whatever you want.
But also there's some of that is, you know, you can also you sometimes need guardrails, and maybe you can also get into that world, which I have gotten into, where, you know, experimentation is a great deal of fun, but sometimes it doesn't lead to the promised land. So, even with traditional rock music now, people are doing things with effects and have been for you know, the past 50 years that takes it out of what you would normally expect. So, but yeah, definitely, you definitely have a lot of opportunities to, you know, get into interesting sounds I definitely love working within the world of electronic music.
Yeah, and I suppose when you did the collaboration with Filter, that was kind of just before or around when Nine Inch Nails and things like that were becoming really big.
Absolutely. That's another one when we work with Filter, right when we were about to release our Vegas album. Yeah, that track, you know, Trip Like Eddie was a track that was on our album, and then they heard that and were really inspired by that, and we took that, they expanded on it, so it really became like a really iconic track, and still to this day, it's one that I play in one form or another in my show, so...
Okay. Do you think that in your style of music, there's a sort of strict formulaic song structure at all, or it's just free-for-all?
Well, I think within sort of EDM, which is now sort of more pop, a lot of pop more than sort of traditional experimental electronic. But I think that all music has, you know, some sort of structure, verse, chorus, bridge, chorus, out, you know, repeat, you know, early on when we were starting out making music, we understood that, you know, to really be able to break through or just create a sound that is palatable to a wider audience,
yep,
you know, you come up with some sort of structure. You know, it can't be a 7-minute banger. You know, we had to try to, even if we weren't working with the vocalists, we were trying to find some structure because we also grew up, you know, both of us grew up listening to traditional rock music and, you know, hip hop and stuff that had that, those sort of guardrails and that sort of structure. So, I think that, you know, I find that people lose track of the structure of a song if it hits them emotionally, mm-hmm. And there's something to it that gets them, whether it's a vocal or it's a sound or just some sort of emotive element that brings people closer to the radio or the speaker or whatever it is that they're listening to. So, and then you kind of, you got to, it's like a meal, you know, you have your main course and you have your appetizers and you have your, you know, your sides, yep. But, you don't just throw pancakes in the middle of, between salad and steak. You gotta have that's, the pancakes are delicious any hour of the day. They're more of a morning thing, so you gotta just kind of structure things out in a way that makes sense. But there are a lot of artists that are breaking, all those barriers, and I'm always amazed when you hear something that is made, whether it's with traditional instruments, guitar, drums, bass, vocals, stuff that's more experimental. Mm. You know, there's just so many chords out there and so many different ways that you can, put those chords in different sequences. But I'm always, amazed by, how people continue to find new ways to express themselves and creatively and musically, and just a big fan of music in general.
Yeah, indeed. Sorry about the crows in the background. Maybe you could sample them, add them to your set.
Where are you at?
Sorry?
Where are you?
Oh, Sydney. So I'm actually in Sydney, just in the outskirts. So anyway,
outskirts of Sydney.
Yeah. I was curious with the crow won't shut up. Curious with the other genres of dance, because some of them are, if there's no vocals involved, it's just like this sinusoidal burst of layers. Do you know what I mean? It sort of builds and then goes back and then breaks down again, builds, and it just seems to be this. I guess you could call it therapeutic in a way. It's not something to sit there and listen to as a hit song. It's just to lose your mind in, I guess.
I was just reading this study about how, you know, electronic music does have that meditative and the fact that it's mindless or sometimes doesn't, you know, necessarily lead you in any way with a vocal or you know, some sort of theme that allows people to imprint their own thoughts and you know, and take their own journey.
Yep.
It's an interesting thing that people are starting to realize that, you know, obviously it's very popular, and every, you know, culture there's some form of music that can be, you know, described as dance, and so there's definitely something to the you know, the need that that no matter, you know, the language or the background, or, you know, people find their way to some sort of version of dance music.
Indeed. Yeah, sorry, a bit of a hot day here. I was curious about that kind of stuff, because it just seems like there's a lot of people who may misunderstand dance and the genre itself, because it's just so broad.
Yeah, I mean, you have, you know, drum and bass, you know, UK breakbeat, now, you know, dubstep, and you have various different versions of dubstep, and you have different versions of house, and, you know, you have traditional electro, and I think that, you know, for us, we always found that, you know, we liked slower stuff as well, so all of our releases always have, you know, especially the album stuff, have different tempos, and we don't really get locked into one, you know, typical sound, if you will. But yeah, I mean, there's so much to find, and you know, again, I think that's one of the things that has really broadened the appeal of electronic music or dance music or whatever, EDM or whatever you call it, is that, you know, people that maybe leaning towards more traditional heavy rock stuff can find something in dubstep that brings them a little closer. Or it's all about the energy, about what, how the track, you know, what feelings that the track, the piece of music emotes and different people, and sometimes, like you said, sometimes people just, they don't want to think about, you know, lyrics, and they just want to loosen the dance floor, or, you know, put something on in the background while they're painting or they're doing their work or whatever, and it's a great, you know, journey to take. And there's, again, there's so many different genres within the electronic dance music, you know, that it's that a lot of people have, you know, even if they're the most hardcore, you know, metal or rock person, you can always find something within the electronic, you know, genre that to them.
Oh, certainly. It's just interspersed throughout all sorts of stuff. I even hear some of it popping up in black metal, which is pretty interesting. But what I was going to ask about is the remix side of things, because you've done a lot of remix work, and I know that there's always artists who, you know, they complain about they had to get their album in quickly and they didn't have any say on the mastering and all the rest of it. So does that kind of give it a new lease of life for the artist?
To do a remix?
Yeah.
You mean for me to do a remix of another person?
Yeah, exactly. When you do remixes for other artists.
It's an interesting dilemma. So I don't do as many remixes as we maybe have done in the past. And I just did this one that's not going to come out till later this year, but this band called Love and Rockets.
Yep.
They're like an 90s band. And their big track, So Alive, which is a these tracks that I was a huge fan of. So when the opportunity, you know, came, I jumped on it to be able to do that. So, yeah, I mean, there's some artists are just, somebody in the record company just says, we need some remixes and we need to, could you, you know, could you? you do something. But the one always seemed to me to work out the best is where the artist feels like, you know, that they have a say in the art and the remixer, and, you know, and again, reach out to me directly or through my team, and then, you know, and if then you feel like, I like to keep as much of the original song, at least lyrically. If there's a vocal, I don't like to just tear the thing apart and make it my own song. It's reinterpreting the song, so I like the essence of the original song I like to keep. So, I'm one that that definitely feels a little bit of the weight of that when you're asked to do a remix, and you definitely want to, you know, I don't want to just tear the track apart and make it a Crystal Method song. I want to make it a new version of itself, but just a little bit of, you know, the sound of what I would maybe do if I had my choices to do, in the studio with what I want.
So, I mean, a band like POD or Smashing Pumpkins, Rage Against the Machine, even The Doors, I guess that'd be interesting stuff to remix, because you've got your purist fans who'd be, you know, they expect one thing and then the artist is just going, do what you like.
And thankfully a lot of those were done before social media and before, like...
Of course.
But, I mean, again, one of the greatest compliments that we received was when there was a bunch of bands doing remixes of The Doors, and so getting a chance to meet the band and they give us their wholehearted stamp of approval on the remix that we did. So yeah, it can be tricky, but again, I think that from the ones you just mentioned and some New Order and some of the other ones that we've done over the years, you want to do something special, but you want to keep the artist, you know, happy as well. So it's finding that going down that right road and not just taking the opportunity for granted to make some new version of some song that, you know, that only you want to hear. You know that the artist is going to be hearing it.
Yeah, sure. So have you found that by analysing other bands' music and remixing it that you've altered your vocal technique in any way?
Well, I'm sure that that's, without a doubt, I think that there's, in the 30 years that we've been making music, there's definitely been some, where you hear another artist and you're like, wow, that track's really amazing. How did they do that? Or just being a fan of music in general, no matter if it's not even in your genre, you know, you just you get inspired. And I think it's like any other, like a painter or a chef, you know, they might have a great meal, you know, at another restaurant, for another chef might present them with a great meal, and they're like, wow, like, didn't know that saffron, you know, with, you know, lamb fucking works so well, you know. And then then they go back and they go into their, you know, kitchen, and they, you know, they use a little bit of saffron, or some other spice or whatever it is. It definitely happens. So I think that happens in every art form, where somebody, where the artist is taken back or inspired by another person's work. And again, the painter might be like, oh, that shade of green that he used, I want to try to find the right way to get to that color. So, you know, just one of these things where undoubtedly that has happened. We've been definitely inspired by the things that have come out while we've been making music, and definitely it's driven us in a direction and changed the way that we produce and write music, for sure.
Cool. Final question for you. I'm just wondering what your initial influences were, and if that included somebody like Gary Numan.
Oh, absolutely. I just saw Gary Numan at a festival this last year, and he's still he's doing a tour over here now, and I wouldn't say I was like the biggest diehard Gary Numan fan, but you you definitely the way that he sounded, he just had this unique take on it, on is that like the, kind of very, I love artists that you just, as soon as you hear one, you know, bit of their voice, you know that's a Gary Numan track, or that's a, you know, there's a lot of artists that can be chameleons and do their do different versions of their they can change their voice and manipulate the sonic structure of their track. But Gary Numan had, you know, an incredible sound, and I'm happy. Again, he fucking killed it when he toured, when I saw him last year. Mm. And I think he's just starting a tour over here now, so hopefully he'll get a chance to come down there. You a big Gary Numan fan?
Yeah, amazing artist. I really liked his Intruder album of his more recent stuff. That was, yeah, just you'll sit into it, listen to the whole thing, and it just blows you away. You got to take it in with headphones.
Yeah, I know, and that's a good way to now the headphones, the game is solid. You can just sit back and really hear all the textures and all the different things that are going on. That's the other thing. He's just, you know, not only does he write really fucking cool tracks, songs, but he's really, you know, understands production and has got a great group of people around him that you know, that creates new versions of him, which is sometimes a really difficult thing for artists to do.
Oh, certainly. And I mean, it's just amazing that he's still around, because some artists, they've just got like 5 years peak and that's it.
I'm amazed that we're still around.
Man, how do you cope with the industry, I suppose? Just, yeah, that last final question, really.
Oh, I just don't. It's changed so much. The way you make music, the way you make money, the way that, you know, release music. Everything is different from when we started. So again, it's sort of like you just gotta, you know, flow with it and navigate through. You know, it's one of the things why we've always sort of done other things, some scoring and some remixes and stuff for video games and syncs and TV and you know, we did the Bones theme for the TV series Bones, and you know, it's just our manager has always been, you know, like, you know, here's an opportunity to do something. What do you think? And it's Ken and I were always like, well, let's give it a shot. You know, let's, like, whether it, things that we, the music we make or the tours that we go on. You know, we used to go on, you know, more traditional rock tours. You know, I opened for Tool back in 2017. I've done plays with, you know, Green Day and Offspring and Filter and Muse, and so you gotta navigate through all the muck and focus on the things that bring you joy and let the pieces fall where they may.
Indeed. Well, we've got 4 nights in a row of Taylor Swift this week, so that's all we're going to hear about for a while.
Four nights. Wow. Where's she playing at the?
It's called Accor Stadium. So I mean, she doesn't have to do any work. Just books a venue and sells out in seconds. I mean, good luck to her. But yeah, just everywhere.
Yeah.
Huge.
Yeah, massive. Awesome. Well, I'm going to be coming down there with my girlfriend. I only have a day in Sydney, but then at the end of the tour, we fly from Perth to Sydney on the Monday, and then we're there. Then we fly home on the Friday, so we're I think I'm going to Kangi Beach. Is that the way, did I say that right?
Kuji.
I think anyways, I got a hotel at the beach there, and then I'm gonna stay, you know, somewhere. She hasn't been to Australia before, so I'm trying to like take advantage, you know. Awesome. Do all the things normally people would like to do, and I'm staying I booked a hotel down in near the Opera House, and so we're just trying to like take it all in, enjoy every moment of it, and yeah.
Well, have fun. I look forward to seeing you. I'll let you go.
Please come to the show then.
Yep, certainly. Thank you for the chat. Much appreciated.
Yep. Do you drink?
A little bit.
What's your favorite drink?
Beer. Australians just drink beer.
Yeah, and you got a good. got a good microbreweries down there. That's the thing that's really changed since the last time I was when we first started going down there.
Yeah.
Or do you just like which?
Well,
Little
Creatures is a good one. That was pretty good.
Little Creatures is that a Sydney brewery?
I think they're actually Perth, ironically enough. There you go.
I'll check that out.
Yeah, it's
sweet.
Very good. I mean, we've got stacks of breweries, but it's hit and miss. It's usually the little small ones which are really good. So, yeah, it's just a matter of trial and error, really.
So Little Creatures, is that what you said, Little Creatures?
Little Creatures, yeah, it's pretty good. Good drop.
Okay, well, I'll definitely I'll put a request in now.
Nice. Okay, see you then. Bye.
All right, cheers, Paul. Take care.
Thanks.